Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Three. That's a magic number.
Joining us for this week's Pick 3 playlist is author Amy Tan. Although she's best known for writing best-selling novels like The Joy Luck Club and The Kitchen God's Wife, she's also written an opera libretto, and she's been known to rock out as the, and I'm going to quote here, lead rhythm dominatrix with the literary garage band Rock Bottom Remainders. Her new book is called The Valley of Amazement, and Amy Tan joins me here in the Soundcheck studio. Amy, welcome back.
Good to be here again.
So fans of yours probably won't be surprised to find Valley of Amazement sort of, you know, mothers and daughters, generations, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But they might be surprised that there seems to be sort of an unexpected connection to your family's past in the backstory of this book.
I didn't know there was this mystery having to do with my grandmother. I was told she was an old-fashioned, traditional woman, quiet, stay-at-home. And I had a favorite photo sitting on my desk that inspired me as I wrote. And then I came across a book called Shanghai Love, and it was about turn-of-the-century Shanghai courtesan culture. And there was a photo of 10 women, and 5 of them were wearing the identical clothes of my grandmother. And suddenly I thought to myself, who was she really?
Hmm. Now, courtesan culture, I mean, this is an important part of the story of Valley of Amazement. It is what it sounds like, but then there's this kind of veneer of, you know, ritual and culture.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, essentially, you know, the oldest profession.
It was a very complex system in many ways. You know, you had levels of courtesans. You had first and second class courtesans. And there were protocols that men were supposed to follow, the main one being give money or give gifts. And the courtesans, at least during the turn of the century and before, were the ones who actually chose who were the man who would be able to go behind the curtain or the door.
Mm.
So very different. And later on, of course, it was more like prostitutes where the man could just simply choose.
Right. So was it this picture that sort of set you down the road to writing this book?
I had been writing another book for 5 years. And when I saw this photo and what it might imply, I went on a mad obsession looking for research about courtesans and to find out if it possibly could be, did women wear that costume for any other reason? You know, did women actually go to photo studios to make souvenir photos for any other reason? And I was so obsessed, I decided I just have to write about and just enter this world full time.
So was this a case of you couldn't resolve the mystery of your own grandmother to your absolute satisfaction, so you had to write a fictional kind of story?
I will never know whether my grandmother really was a courtesan unless I had her writing, you know, and saying, yes, I testify that I was. But what I wanted to do is who she might have been if she had been in that world. And that it was actually interesting for me to ask myself if my circumstances changed suddenly and I found myself having to live in a world like that, what would I do? What kind of person would I be? How would I keep my pride?
Mm.
And what skills would I use to survive? Popularity was key. How would I become popular?
And these are the sorts of questions that Violet, your main character, faces, her mother, her daughter.
Yes.
You know,
yeah.
It's
yeah.
a sort of passed
yeah,
down
yeah.
generation to generation. We're mm-hmm. speaking with Amy Tan, whose new book is called Valley of Amazement. It's out now. And Shanghai in the early 20th century was, in many respects, a kind of outpost of Western Europe. I mean,
it was very international. It was very cosmopolitan. It started as a sleepy village in the 1800s. And by the turn of the century, it was growing so rapidly. There was a lot going on with foreign trade between Western countries and China. That figured so heavily into shaping the personality of Shanghai and what it is today.
Mm-hmm.
A little turnaround there in, you know, who's in control, but very much the personality of Shanghai. On both sides of my family, there were family members who were part of foreign trade. They did translation. So you can see, even in my family, how prevalent that was, how important that was to the business income of people during that time.
Yeah. And so you had a lot of Western music being played in Shanghai. There were, you know,
Foxtrot and the Lindy Hop and all of that.
And
clubs, nightclubs.
As some people would find out during the run-up to World War II, it was also a kind of a back door through which many Jews were able to get out of Europe.
Exactly.
Through Shanghai.
So yes. There's still the settlement or the Jewish area there, unfortunately being torn down, some of it.
So how important was music to courtesan culture, the ability of a courtesan to have a repertoire of songs?
I might have exaggerated in my book how many songs that a courtesan might have needed to become popular, but entertainment, you know, being able to recite a story or a poem or sing and play the zither or whatever was part of the art. And in fact, it was more so emphasized more so during the mid-1800s than later, when sex was not part of the business. But, you know, so that they became known as maestros, the really good ones. And they still used that term as the years went by, and they really engaged in sex, but also had these entertainment skills. So I imagine that a courtesan should have had known about 10 songs, you know, really well and performed them dramatically. But my character, of course, she's going to become more popular, so she knows songs of the season and she knows tragic songs, new, you know, songs of love, you know.
And although she's been raised in Shanghai, she's half American and sees herself as a very Western,
yes,
you know.
Yes, yeah. She's never thought of herself as Chinese until she finds out later
right.
who she is.
So, Amy, for your playlist for us, your pick three today, it actually is very much Western-based.
Yes.
Do you listen to music while you write?
Always.
Really?
Always. It is a thing that puts me into the mood. And, you know, I see scenes as moods. And so I choose a piece of music, and that is the music I play over and over again, the same track. And soundtracks are great for that because they are made to be in the background and they are made to establish a mood. And so that's what I do with each of the scenes.
Well, now, you mentioned soundtrack, and one of your picks is the soundtrack to the Ang Lee film Lust, Caution,
yes.
which is set in Shanghai.
Yes, yes.
So is this something that it just seems to be part and parcel of the story of the book, The Valley of Amazement?
It is, and many of the songs there were appropriate, and there was one favorite. And I just played that over and over again. It was sort of wistful. It was kind of sexy. And so I played that, and it has violins, and it has the kind of romantic sounds that a lot of Chinese music has,
right.
Stringed instruments. A sort of mournful tone to it, very romantic tone.
So from the soundtrack to the film Lust, Caution, this is Wang Chia-Chi's theme. The composer is Alexander Desplat. Wang Chia-Chi's theme by Alexander Desplat, who's become pretty well known for his film scores in Hollywood. He wrote this for the Ang Lee movie Lust, Caution, but as Amy Tan is telling us, it also serves as a kind of soundtrack for her recent writing, her newest book called The Valley of Amazement. So were you actually listening to this piece while writing?
Yeah, every day. You know, it's in the background. It is so rich and has a slow passion to it. There's a simplicity to it, but in the background of that piano, you hear this growing complexity of which I think it has to be there in a novel. You have to establish, you know, there's a clear theme. And right. In the back, there's a lot of context going on.
Well, now, the context of this new novel has some referring to it as 50 Shades of Tan.
Yeah, you know? That was my joke, actually. I originated that joke, and it
okay.
was, yeah, no. I mean, I hope it's not seen as 50 Shades of Tan. I was writing this, and I was really fearful people would, look at the sex as being a little too salacious. And then 50 Shades of Grey came out. And then I was afraid that people would think that I had copied some formula. I've never read the book, but whatever it was, there were a lot of women reading this book. And I thought, oh, you know, please.
So you just never bothered to get around? If all these women are reading it and
little time to read books. And I heard enough. You know, there were selections read by David Sedaris and Ellen DeGeneres and things like that. And I heard it and I said, okay,
having a novel read by
enough.
David Sedaris, I
exactly.
don't think
yeah,
is going to
no,
give
well,
you the
any novel. He could read my novel and come off very strange. Yeah, but I heard enough, and
right.
friends would say, oh, it's very badly written. I read the whole thing, and so I know,
I heard
reasons.
The same thing. It's like,
yeah.
oh, it's really badly written, but I read the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, your writing hasn't gone in that direction in the past, and now here you are, you're talking about courtesan culture, and you have no choice. You have to open that door and walk into that room.
I wasn't going to write about it, but my first reader, who's she's like a freelance editor, she read this. And after a few chapters, she said, you know, it takes place in a courtesan house, and you really need to have at least something mentioned about sex. They're not playing ping pong. They're not playing Chinese checkers, you know. So I thought, I do need to do that. Now, my reluctance is that people always think all my books are autobiographical. I mean, I could be a ghost telling a story and they'll think, well, how was it being a ghost?
Yeah, when did you die? Amy?
Yeah, exactly. So everything is autobiographical. And I could imagine some readers thinking that they had a private window on my bedroom.
Well, I can see how that would be.
And being in the rock bottom remainders does not help, you know, having played a dominatrix in a rock band. Yeah.
In a rock band with Stephen King and Dave Barry and all the rest of the gang.
Yeah. Respected writers.
Now, were you musical as a kid? Did you grow up playing?
I started piano lessons when I was 5, and I took them for 15 years. So music, classical music, was a huge part of my life. I hated it, but I took the lessons, and I love it now.
Uh-huh,
I go
uh-huh.
to the symphony, the opera more often, far more often than I do to the movies. And that's reflected in the fact, as you know, that I wrote libretto for an opera.
For The Bonesetter's Daughter.
Yeah.
That was about 6 years ago, right?
It was about, well, it premiered 5 years
ago.
5 years
ago.
2008,
right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that is a very different kind of writing experience, I would imagine.
It definitely is, but it is a lot having to do with mood. It has to do with scenes. It has to do with a very clear, defined acts.
Yeah.
So it has to be more defined for the composer, too. It was very collaborative. Worked with Stuart Wallace and had to know his sound world and know what each scene was and all the emotions we had to put in there.
So we actually got to hear a little bit of that opera the last time you were on Soundcheck, The Bonesetter's Daughter. What we're going to hear next, though, is back to your pick three, the Rachmaninoff Third Piano Concerto.
Yeah.
What's the mood that's established here?
It's, in some ways, it's like that soundtrack of Less Caution, because it starts off very simply with notes that are piano notes, and then it builds a little. And to me, it tells a story. It has a mood that where it's almost as though somebody very innocent goes into the world and then meets something they didn't expect, and it builds and builds. And there are moments when the person just crashes completely, is almost destroyed, gets back up again, now has this new knowledge, and goes forward, again crashes. It's sort of a, Anna Karenina's story, only at the end, you know, she's doesn't fall into the train tracks. You know, there's, I think, a sense of strength and hope at the end.
So this, too, could be the soundtrack for this new novel.
Yeah, absolutely. I listened to that as well a lot. I started my day with Rachmaninoff, but I also interspersed Rachmaninoff throughout the day.
Well, let's hear the opening of the Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto No. 3. You like the recording that Yefim Bronfman did with
I
the
do.
Conductor,
I have
Esa-Pekka
several.
Salonen.
I have several recordings, but this is the one I love the best.
Amy Tan, picking three for us today on Soundcheck. Of the Rachmaninoff Piano Concerto No. 3, played by pianist Yefim Bronfman with Esa-Pekka Salonen and the Philharmonia Orchestra. Amy Tan, picking a Pick 3 playlist for us on Soundcheck today, the author of The Joy Luck Club and The Kitchen God's Wife, the libretto for the opera The Bone Setter's Daughter. Her new book is called The Valley of Amazement, and it is out now. And, talking about how music sort of underpins so much of what you've done throughout your life, it seems.
Well, I think that music also enhanced my sense of creativity, and people are finding that out now, that music helps you not only become more, I think part of it is you see patterns. You see how things are structured, but also creatively. But also it helps you perform better. I thought to myself, is it distracting or is it helping? And I think because it gets me in the mood and it cuts out everything else, that it does enhance my performance and keeps me going because I know that it's going to continue. So I just continue.
Now, when you say performance, you mean sitting down at the typewriter and actually doing your job.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Sports players or whatever, but right. I do think creative work as well.
Well, but, you know, then there's the other part of your performance, your occasional rock band, the Rock
yes,
Bottom
yes,
Remainders.
Yes, the sad musical side of me.
You guys basically only do benefit stuff now.
Yeah,
right?
we're doing something at the Miami Book Fair this year in November, and that's for fun. And I don't know whether we're raising money. Maybe we're not good enough to raise money anymore. but we don't take money.
Right.
That's the thing. We don't take money.
and the book about the band is called Hard Listening, The Greatest Rock Band Ever of Authors Tells All, which is like the worst written title.
Yeah, exactly. But that's, when you get all these authors together and, they're collaborating on things, that's what you get.
So now you have a signature tune with the band.
Yeah. It's to make up for the fact that I don't have a good voice. So I have good costume. And
there are videos on YouTube.
Oh, unfortunately. Yes.
Of you dressed rather provocatively. Mm-hmm. And is that a whip you're carrying?
It is. It's a cat of nine tails made out of something. Scott Turow gave that to me. So I don't take any credit.
Oh, wacky, wacky authors,
yeah,
you.
Yeah. And that song is, no matter how badly I sing, suddenly I'm elevated to true rock star when I whip Stephen King in his derriere, so to speak. And he bends over to take it.
And this is why you can, in fact, raise money with the Rock Bottom Remainders.
Yes, exactly.
The song we're talking about is These Boots Are Made for Walkin', which was recorded by Nancy Sinatra, who, all due respect, is not Frank Sinatra, you know?
No, but she has this great attitude. You know, you have almost a...
That's yes. what you were just saying, though,
exactly.
right? She pulls this off
pulls
through sheer attitude.
Yeah, yeah, she does. It's very simple. Again, starts very simply. Like all the songs I picked out, they start in a simple way, and they build and have this tremendous power to to the song. She was, I think, one of the first women who picked a song that had nothing to do with I'm crying because the boy left me. This one is about you treated me badly and I'm now going to beat you up for it, you know,
mm-hmm.
emotionally. I'm going to do the same thing you did to me and you are going to be sorry.
And again, not too hard to go from that song to the new book, The Valley of Amazement, you know, this character of Violet who's getting knocked down and picks herself back
yes.
up and
yeah.
gets stronger all the time.
Yeah.
The new novel is called The Valley of Amazement. We'll hear Boots Are Made for Walking from Nancy Sinatra, picked for us by Amy Tan. Amy, it's been a while since you were last on Soundcheck. So nice to see you again. Congratulations on
Thank
the new
you.
Book.
Thank you. Good to be here.
These boots are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.